You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. It's a great pleasure to have with us Philip Haney, a remarkable public servant, now retired from the Department of Homeland Security, which he helped found, serving for 13 years, as I recall, as an armed customs and border protection officer, including several tours of duty in the National Targeting Center in Washington, D.C., where he brought to bear an extraordinary intellect and depth of knowledge about the jihadist threat, the doctrine of Sharia that animates it, and the tactics of the global jihad movement that Sharia inspires. He is the co-author with Art Moore of a best-selling book, See Something, Say Nothing: A Homeland Security Officer Exposes the Government's Submission to Jihad. Phil Haney, welcome back. It is so good to have you, sir.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here.
You know, we were talking in the previous segment with another great freedom fighter, Bill Warner, out of Tennessee. I asked him about a study, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it as well. In fact, there are two by this organization in Britain, the Center on Religion and Geopolitics, both of which have warned about the so-called nonviolent Islamists in our midst and their agenda, which it turns out is identical to that of those who would use violence as a first recourse. Phil, based on your experience, is this a surprising finding or absolutely obvious?
No, it's not surprising at all. I think of it as a gravitational force like we see in the space movies. The closer you get to the sun, the faster you go as it draws you into its gravitational field. You walk into the world of Islam, and if you're dedicated and focused on it, you are going to eventually come to the center of the ideology, which is implementation of Sharia law by the use of violence, if necessary, also known as jihad.
How is that manifested in the conduct of, say, groups like the Muslim Brotherhood?
One of the things that you will find when you read these studies for Caliph and Country and Milestones to Militancy that were put out by the Tony Blair Institute, to find these conclusions and confirm that the Muslim Brotherhood is the gravitational force of the global Islamic movement is really shattering to the CVE, Countering Violent Extremism, narrative. The Muslim Brotherhood ideology saturates the entire global Islamic movement. And if you enter into this arena and you stay focused on the ideology that you're being taught and that you embrace, it inevitably leads you to confrontation with governments and individuals who are not Sharia compliant, which after all is the entire purpose of the Muslim Brotherhood. It's a revivalist movement started in 1928 specifically to bring back the caliphate and implement Sharia law on a global level, and that's exactly what they're still doing today.
But Phil, you have seen this firsthand, the presence of Muslim Brotherhood operatives in advisory roles at the Department of Homeland Security under Barack Obama, in some cases actually as employees in that agency or others in the government. How is it that knowing what you know about the Brotherhood and the role it plays in promoting Sharia supremacism and its mission of destroying us in the United States, as well as imposing this caliphate under Sharia worldwide, that we're allowing these kinds of individuals inside the wire, let alone having the sort of influence that you just alluded to there with respect to defining and implementing this so-called countering violent extremism program?
Well, put some numbers on it. Somewhere between 25 and 35 individuals I documented during the course of my career that were given positions of influence and authority within the executive branch or the legislative branch or the judicial branch of the government. And how they do it, they're very persuasive. They attach themselves to concepts like civil rights and civil liberties, equality, fairness, etc., and kind of attract the political structure and persuade them that they're the nice Muslims and that those guys over there in Syria and Iraq, those are the bad Muslims, but not us. We renounce violence. And that's what the key to this whole conversation is. They renounce violence, they say, but it turns out that these two recent studies contradict that severely. They may renounce violence verbally, but they're in the middle of the global jihad movement. And that is a remarkable accomplishment to be able to persuade individuals at the highest level of power that they're peaceful while simultaneously carrying on a global jihad movement, which is exactly the reason why we need to designate the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization. Everybody in Congress needs to read these two reports and then come to the obvious conclusion. This group is a threat to us, and we need to get busy and designate them.
I couldn't agree more. And in fact, we all anticipated that that was going to be one of the things done early on by President Trump, who not only spoke very articulately about the need to have a fundamental course correction from what you struggled with in terms of the Obama embrace of the Muslim Brotherhood, but also the idea that he was going to roll up the networks that were, as he said, radicalizing in our communities. And those, of course, were the Brotherhood's mosques and Islamic societies and front groups of various other kinds. Phil Haney, based upon your long experience with all of this, your close observation as a guy who studies things like insects as a profession, as well as these kinds of bugs, you've got an insight, I'm sure, into what's going on inside the Trump administration at the moment. Are there still Muslim Brotherhood operatives or sympathizers or enablers inside our government as you see it? And if so, is that why the Trump administration has not designated the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization?
I think it is. Even aside from the exact number of individuals who may be affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood are still inside, what is more fundamental is the ideology, the worldview that they have transferred over to us, entire structures of the government, that if we simply find a way to coexist with Islam and not address the ideology that drives it, that gravitational force, that somehow we'll be immune to the forces or the effects of this global movement, but we won't be. And that's another thing these studies pointed out. The journey into violent jihad doesn't come from the internet. It comes from the mosque. It comes from the structures like the Muslim Brotherhood, and it comes from who you know. The whole concept of this arbitrary radicalization, like a meteor from space that hits you, is false. It's always a network, and it's always the individuals. And that is what I focused on when I was active duty, and that's also what got me in so much trouble.
This is a subject for another day. We've got so much more on that score to talk about. Phil, I hope you'll come back to us soon for that purpose. But in the meantime, I appreciate tremendously the work you do, among other things, as a senior fellow for the Center for Security Policy. Your book on See Something, Say Nothing is required reading for all of us as we wrestle with this particular part of this war for the free world. Phil, thanks so much for joining us today. Next up, we'll speak with Mark Labouie from Canada about the war on freedom of speech there that's coming to a theater near you. Straight ahead.